This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt.
Yay! And this is the show where we talk about sci-fi, fantasy, all the stuff that we are reading, and talk about what you guys are talking about in the forums.
Yeah, I am so happy that more and more people are joining the club on Goodreads. Mm-hmm. Just really fun to see all the new voices out there, along with the old familiars as well. It's mm-hmm. good stuff. Good new year feeling for me.
Absolutely. Although I don't know how good they're feeling about our book choice, but we'll get more on that later.
Yes, I'm not sure how good I'm feeling.
I'm not sure either.
I've got some thoughts.
You know what I am feeling good about?
Wine.
Our top segment, what are we drinking?
I am drinking exactly the same thing I was drinking in episode 85, which is a 2009 Le Port de Bordeaux. It's a new bottle of it.
Oh, okay.
But it's a new bottle. Yeah, I mean, it's not the same bottle I was drinking back then.
Because I would say you got to let them breathe a little bit, but maybe not that much.
Not that much. No, it's a good, cheap $4.99 wine from Trader Joe's that is quite tasty.
Fantastic. I am drinking a 2005 Toasted Head Cabernet Sauvignon.
Sauvignon.
And it's...
You know, Cabernet Sauvignon is American for Bordeaux.
Is it really?
It is, because you can't call it Bordeaux because
it's not from the region. Gotcha.
But it's essentially the same kind of wine.
Well, mine's not that good.
No.
I don't know if I have a bad bottle or what the deal is, but it's tasting a little off to me, but I'm still drinking it.
Does it taste like toast?
I was going to say more like head, and then I realized that's probably wildly inappropriate.
Yeah, no, don't say that.
I guess I just said it, didn't I?
Yeah.
Oops. Well, let's go on to the quick burns.
So our first quick burn comes via Boing Boing. William Gibson has an essay collection out, Distrust That Particular Flavor. Gibson always kind of opposes the idea that he's an essayist. He says in his introduction to the book that writing nonfiction feels like cheating on his fiction work to him. But there seem to be some pretty good stories in here. Cory Doctorow reviews it on Boing Boing. Mm-hmm. Lots of musings on, as you would expect, cyberspace, which he coined the term for. An essay on Gibson's early obsession with eBay and vintage watches, and a lot of cool stuff about Japan. So I'm looking forward to getting a look at this.
I would imagine that after writing Adoru, Gibson has some pretty interesting ideas about Japan. And I would like to read this essay book very much.
Yeah, especially if you've been to Japan or you're interested in Japan, Gibson's take on it is kind of probably an essential reference point in kind of collecting your information about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. No, he's a great writer, and I need to finish the trilogy that starts with Pattern Recognition. I can't remember the name. The Case Pollard trilogy. I'm not sure if that's actually what the trilogy is called off the top of my head. But I was actually talking about Case Pollard this weekend because I was in a store that sells clothes that is very similar to her outfit, and to her clothes.
Uh-huh.
And I remembered that I'd done like a Polyvore like fashion mashup post on some blog about everything that they mention in the book that is of her clothing. And so I put it all together in one place so you can actually go and buy the exact outfit.
No kidding.
So maybe I'll have to find that and dig it up, because she has some pretty cool fashion sense, I must say.
Yeah, that's Zero History, right?
Mm-hmm.
is in that series. Is that right? Yeah. And pattern recognition. What's the third one?
Gosh, now I'm going to have to look it up and it's going to drive me crazy because I was just talking about it. Let's see. Pattern recognition novel. The audience is like, why don't you know this? Spook Country.
So, oh, right. Of course. Spook Country.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've read all three of those.
There you go. I have not. I
read them out of order.
I'm missing the most recent one.
I actually read Spook Country, then Pattern Recognition, and then I read those before Zero History came out.
I haven't read Zero History yet. It concludes the trilogy.
So. Noir detective cyberpunk novels than they are science fiction. In that we have this debate on the Goodreads forum a lot of like, is this really science fiction? Those novels are on the edge. I like that. I like when authors are like, I don't really care if this fits in a genre or not. This is the story I want to tell. And it's going to have some augmented reality and some crazy fashion. And if that's science fiction to you, well, there you go. Enjoy the story.
Were you going to say later. Balderdash? Balderdash?
I don't know what I was going to say.
Balderdash.
Yeah.
There's another post on Boing Boing today, which is the photos from the first science fiction convention in 1937. Awesome. It's basically like the first con. The first con.
Now, there's some debate. As anytime you say something is the first, somebody else is going to pop up and go, no, it's not. This is the first. Mm-hmm. But this is generally considered to be the first by a lot of people. And there's some great photos up here. One, Walter Gillings, Arthur C. Clarke, and Ted Carnell mm-hmm. in front of Theosophical Hall in Leeds, getting ready for the convention. There was, a gathering in New York at an author's house. Which is that's not the same. That's not a convention. That's just having people over, right?
Yeah.
So this is a convention. They went to a hall.
In a public space. They went to a hall.
They got together. Yeah.
I have to say, Walter Gillings, kind of hot.
Really?
He's kind of hot. Yeah, look at him.
With the cigarette?
He looks all roguish. Maybe just Photoshop out the cigarette.
With the cigarette hanging out of his mouth?
Just Photoshop that out.
And the tie?
With the tie, yeah, with the tie. Yeah? What are you talking about? In the vest?
And you're not talking about Carnell over there with the sweater.
No. Uh-huh. He kind of looks like a child molester.
All right, there you go. Just a little bit.
I mean that in the nicest way possible in his memory.
you can't mean that in a nice way, can you?
No.
I don't think so.
It's the turtleneck. And no, it's actually the mustache.
It's kind of the mustache.
It's definitely the mustache.
It's not his fault. That was the style back then. That was before pedophiles went and ruined it for everyone.
Went and ruined creepy mustaches
creepy
for everyone.
Mustaches for everyone. Let's move on to IO9. There's a Lauren Davis post up there about science fiction's predictions for the year 2012. What we should be experiencing based on what has been written, filmed, or televisioned about the coming year. Looks like we'll get an evangelical preacher elected to be president of the United States.
Hmm.
This, according to Robert Heinlein.
Yes, and the U.S. economy is going to collapse, according to Paul W.S. Anderson's Death Race.
The zombie apocalypse will begin, according to I Spit on Your Rave, and also will end, according to I Am Legend.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
That's going to be a very interesting year.
Actually, according to I Am Legend, it's been going on for like 3 years now.
Oh, well, we don't know that it hasn't been.
We haven't noticed.
So that could actually be true.
Right.
And the doctor will light the Olympic flame.
Conan O'Brien will lose his legs, as found in Futurama.
And the maximum height of all humans will be legally reduced to 4 feet.
And about time, too.
Wait, that's just a Genesis song. That doesn't count.
Yeah, it's stretching
that's
it.
That's not science fiction. It's just a Genesis thought.
Oh, how about this? Star Trek Voyager. Captain Catherine Janeway's parents will meet at the proto-Martian biosphere called the Millennium Gate being built in Indiana this year.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff kind of like that. Aliens are going to start colonizing the Earth. And, of course, that'll bring along our eventual destruction. The world will end.
Yeah, 2012. World will end.
That's how it's going to go down. Yeah,
that's just the way it is.
We are going to have some big-ass parties once that comes around.
Are you calling me fat?
No. The world and at large.
Oh, are you calling the world, fat?
Fat and large.
Wow. Finally, Adam Wirt at the Wirt Zone was talking about a book that he has been participating in. He wrote an essay for called Beyond the Wall, Exploring George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire, edited by James Lowder.
Yeah, he's officially allowed to talk about it. His cone of silence has been lifted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious to see what his essay is all about.
Yeah, full list of contributors is coming soon, and it should be published probably at least in the UK in June 2012. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about this.
We are unfortunately not contributors.
No.
But maybe we should be.
Maybe that's fortunately for some. I don't know.
Maybe. All right, so shall we move on to the calendar?
Let's do.
All right, January 17th, we get The Coldest War by Ian Tregellis, which we have been talking about nonstop for at least, I don't know, 6 months or so. Yeah. It was supposed to come out on December 20th. This is the Audible release.
Right. And I checked Ian Tregellis's blog today. No mention of this one way or the other. So I assume that means it's still coming out. I did look at Audible, and I didn't see any mention of it there, which had me worried. So we'll just see tomorrow.
We've got a little time.
Also due January 17th, Shadows in Flight by Orson Scott Card. Ender's Shadow explores the stars in an all-new novel. At the end of Shadow of the Giant, Bean had flown to the stars with three of his kids, the three who share the engineered genes that gave him both hyperintelligence and a short, cruel physical life. The time dilation granted by the speed of their travel gives Earth scientists generations to seek a cure to no avail. In time, they are forgotten, a fading Ansible signal speaking of events lost to Earth's history. But the Delphikis are about to make a discovery that will let them save themselves and perhaps all of humanity in the days to come. You'll just have to read Shadows in Flight to find out more.
You will just have to read that. And on January 24th, we have Orb, Scepter, Throne by Ian Cameron Esselmont. Esselmont's fourth novel set in the Mazalan world returns to us the gaslit streets of Darujistan. Ha ha, I said it right this time.
Yes.
Shortly after the events of Erikson's Toll the Hounds. We've talked about this one a little bit, but it sounds pretty interesting.
Book Girl and the Corrupted Angel by Mizuki Nomura. College exams are approaching for Toko Amano, who is president of the Literary Club, a closet book-eating goblin, and shameless procrastinator. Toko does the unthinkable and declares club activities suspended, unencumbered by the demand of his taskmistress to deliver handwritten improv stories. Konoha finds himself helping his oft-estranged classmate, Nanase Kotobuki, in the music room after school. When one of Kotobuki's friends goes missing before Christmas, though, vanishing amidst rumors of her being an angel of music, Konoha finds himself swept up in a mystery.
Ooh, as these things angel happen. Of music, you say. Now I'm going to have to start singing some Phantom of the Opera.
There you go. Also on January 24th, a reissue from Mariner of Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, fantastic. And then on the 31st, we have Heir of Navrun, the Rieria Revelations by Michael J. Sullivan. The new empire intends to mark its victory over the nationalists with a bloody celebration. On the high holiday of Wintertide, the Witch of Melengar will be burned and the Heir of Navrun executed.
About time, too.
About that. You know, she was just not a nice lady.
No.
On the same day, the Empress faces a forced marriage with a fatal accident soon to follow. Spoiler alert. The new empire is confident with the totality of its triumph, but there's just one problem. Royce and Hadrian have finally found the heir of Navrun, and they have their own holiday plans.
That's the publisher's copy, too. And then looking a little farther down the road, February 7th, Throne of the Crescent Moon by Saladin Ahmed. The Crescent Moon Kingdom's land of Jinn and ghouls, holy warriors and heretics, caliphs and killers, is at the boiling point of a power struggle between the iron-fisted caliph and the mysterious master thief known as the Falcon Prince.
And then finally for this week, also on February 7th, we have City of Dragon, Volume 3 of the Rain Wilds Chronicles by Robin Hobb. Because of the swollen waters of the Rain Wild River, the Lost City can be reached only by flight, a test of endurance and skill beyond the stunted dragon's strength. Venturing across the swift-running river in tiny boats, the dragon scholar Elise and a handful of keepers discover a world far different from anything they have ever known or imagined. I love Robin Hobb. I haven't read this series yet because we've been reading so much other stuff, but I want to pick up the Rain Wilds Chronicles very soon.
Mrs. Murphy.
I actually have the first book on my Kindle. I just haven't had a chance to read it yet. But what are you going to do? Well, what we can do is have a note from our sponsor. This podcast, of course, is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many of the New York Times bestsellers. For listeners of this podcast, I think it's pretty safe to recommend The Coldest War by Ian Tregellis.
I hope so.
It should be out tomorrow.
Of course, Rule 34, our current pick, is also available on Audible.
There you go. As a backup.
Yeah. Coldest War. One of the two. If you haven't got one, maybe the other one.
Yeah, so head on over to audiblepodcast.com/sword to get a free audiobook of your choice when you go today. That's audiblepodcast.com/sword. Tell your friends. All right, well, now it is time for Barrier Sword, which is our feedback from the audience. And there is some funny stuff that you guys have been posting. One includes some fanciful pose striking by a certain fantasy author. This thread was started by Kid. He says, "It looks like author Jim C. Hines has decided to demonstrate himself how sexist fantasy book covers are. It's pretty damn hilarious and clever." And I was looking at these earlier, and they are just really, really funny. I have to say, he's picking some of the more provocative book covers. I mean, this is not necessarily indicative of all fantasy book covers, but the poses he makes are really, really funny. And actually show you how uncomfortable most of these women would be in real life were they standing this way.
Exactly. If you're not getting it, or if you haven't looked at the picture on jimshines.com, he is mimicking the pose of the covers of books like The Shape of Desire by Sharon Shin or Magic to the Bone by Devin Monk. And to hilarious effect, he is a pretty average, you know, I'd say he's probably in his 30s, late 30s guy. Mm-hmm. You know, not horribly out of shape, but he's not some like muscle bound six pack wearing guy. So, you know, when he puts on the black tank top, turns his butt towards you and looks coquettishly over his shoulder, it's hilarious.
It is very funny.
And it just kind of shows like how silly these poses are on the covers of the books.
Like that one for The Shape of Desire. Like, how is she even comfortable on that log sitting that way?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, she looks like she's going to fall off.
And he's on a couch.
And why are so many women cheap. Why are so many women wearing half shirts? Why is that a thing?
Yeah, it must be really warm in fantasy.
Wherever they are.
Yeah.
It's very warm, and they do lots of crunches. The best one, in my opinion,
is Vicious Grace by MLN Hanover, where the woman has a rifle behind her head, and she's kind of thrusting out her chest
and
while standing with the rifle. Mm-hmm. So he's got like a Nerf gun behind his head. He's got his shirt off. God bless him.
Ow, ow!
And, you know, mimicking that pose right to the end.
In that one, he says, "My brother-in-law is a chiropractor. If everyone posed like this, he'd be a billionaire." I didn't even come close to the spinal curve on the cover. That was the best I could do.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think that's physically possible, what the artwork woman is doing.
Good effort, Mr. Hines. It looks awesome, and I wish I had come up with that idea because it's hilarious.
Thanks to Kid for pointing it out to us on the forums as well.
Absolutely. And then we have a thread by Dustin who asks, "Who would you pick to make first contact? Or as an ambassador for the human race if a spacecraft showed up today? I'm probably fumbling the question, but there it is. Would you choose someone different if they were hostile rather than neutral? I don't honestly have an opinion. I know who I wouldn't pick, but curious on other thoughts. It could be anyone."
I immediately thought of the same thing that Micah, who was our first responder on the thread, thought. Morgan Freeman.
Ooh, that's a
good
one.
He's sensible. He's eloquent. He has a voice that could melt butter.
I mean, would have to say I would agree with Terp, Kristen. And actually, I thought this before I saw her post, but Patrick Stewart would be for me.
That's another
because
good one. Yeah.
Not only does he have the voice, but he also understands how the Prime Directive works.
That's true. I thought Tassie Dave had a good one. Stephen Fry.
Oh, yeah.
Although you want to worry about comedy not translating across species. So.
Tony Blair, according to Phil, because he's expendable.
Oh, please. Scott says the Dalai Lama.
Mm.
The current Dalai Lama. Not a bad one.
Yeah. And he also says the Westboro Baptist Church. Interesting. That may cause some problems. But if they just beam them up and take them out of the country, that'd be fine, too.
Chris says Jerry Pornell, but I'd be afraid he'd talk their ear off. Or ears.
And
or
Tony,
whatever passes for ears.
Tony says Ted Nugent.
Nah,
I can't not say that. That would probably be hilarious.
Yeah.
I may not agree with all of his politics, but I do enjoy Ted Nugent. I think he's hilarious
guy.
And he stands up for what he believes in. Let me tell you. So that was a great thread. If you have any more suggestions, head on over to Goodreads and make a post in the "Who would you pick to make first contact" thread. All right, so now we've got some TV, movies, and video games to talk about. Actually, just mostly TV shows. And one of them is actually pretty relevant because it has to do with the book that we've read previously, which, of course, is Ready Player One.
Yeah, Warner Brothers. Actually, I think this is regarding the film, if I'm reading this right. Warner Brothers has the rights to Ready Player One, and Ernie Cline, who wrote the book, has scripted the feature. And apparently, according to Slash Film, they are calling in Eric Eason for a rewrite, Eason wrote Manito, Journey to the End of Night, and a film called A Better Life. He directed Manito, Journey to the End of Night as well. So they're not satisfied with Ernie Cline, who is a screenwriter.
I know, that's kind of worrisome.
His own screenplay for Ready Player One.
That is a little bit nerve-wracking for me. And I feel bad for Ernie Cline in this because it's kind of your, that's what he does for a living. He writes and then he writes screenplays.
Yeah, he wrote the movie Fanboys, if you don't know.
Yeah, and I would be kind of bummed if my own project was taken out of my hands and I couldn't continue to... Well, we're not saying that he's not going to continue to work on the project.
Sure.
Like, we don't know that. We don't know what's going on.
Variety is reporting that Eric Eason has been brought in to rewrite. And who knows? Maybe it's just a touch-up. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're looking at it saying, yeah, Ernie, this is great, but we want to go in a little bit different direction with this and that.
Well, maybe he's too close to it. You know, maybe
why a lot of writers who are also screenwriters mm-hmm. are not allowed to adapt their own books because they are too close to it and they won't give up things that need to be given up for the movie.
Right. I think that is my best guess about what's going on. And thanks to Kev for sending this in over email. I think maybe we should have a movie night when they finally get around to making the
film. Yeah, we should.
That'd be fun. So I don't know. Have you been heading over to England to watch the new Sherlock Holmes on the BBC? Tom?
I have not been pirating any episodes of the new Sherlock.
Oh.
With Mr. Cumberbatch because
no.
I am lazy.
Oh.
and ethical, extraordinarily ethical. I have heard it is absolutely fantastic. It's not coming to the United States until May, which is a crime against nature and humanity.
I have also heard that it's amazing. And I also guess that I will love it so much and be really excited to see the next episode. I mean, when it comes out here in the U.S.
Right, in May.
In May.
Cumberbatch is cast in the next Abrams Star Trek movie as well.
Yes, we don't know who he's going to play. Some people are guessing he might be a young Khan.
Uh-huh. That's been the rumors that Khan would be the villain. And originally it was going to be Benicio del Toro. But then that fell through.
I can see him as a young Khan. Almost better than Cumberbatch, but I love Benedict Cumberbatch so much.
Yeah. Cumberbatch probably going to be the villain. They haven't even confirmed that. They won't say anything. They're so cagey.
Oh my God. I just realized that all the people in this film are totally like my biggest crushes ever. Oh, Zachary Quinto,
yeah.
Chris Pine,
mm-hmm.
and Benedict Cumberbatch. It's going to be the best. I can't wait. I want it now. I want it to come out now. She's hot, too.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I'd make out with her. Well, maybe I shouldn't admit that on the show.
You just made a few people's night.
Yeah. Well, you know, if my life depended on it, probably
Speaking
not.
Speaking of making out
Probably
with
if I just had enough of this Cabernet Sauvignon.
Time for a book check-in.
Okay, so I digressed a little bit on that last thread. So we are talking about Rule 34 by Charles Stross, and some of you have posted your initial impressions on the book, not all of them favorable. So I'm kind of curious to know what you think, Tom, because I'm kind of going both ways with it right now, to also reference our last thread.
Speaking of making out and going both ways, Rule 34 by Charles Stross. I would say I am also going both ways. I like parts of it really well. I thought I'd be really bugged by the second person, but I find it kind of cool. It reminds me of NPC text from role-playing games, like the mm-hmm. good NPC text where it's like you then go. I'm like, ooh, it's like I'm doing a text adventure. Now I'm doing this. Now I'm doing that. That part is working for me. I find the Scottish accent on the audiobook to be distracting.
Okay. So you're listening to the audiobook and I'm reading it. So that's
and
one
I'm
difference.
Getting used to it, but that's a little hump to get over. It's not that I can't understand them. It's just distracting. I also find the fact that it's a male reader and it's a female character a little bit odd.
What? Really?
To get over
that
the hump.
Is weird.
Yeah. I'm not very far into the book. So far, I feel like the sexual content is more than I expected mm-hmm. and probably should have expected, but I didn't. But it hasn't rubbed me the wrong way yet. However, I think it might. I get the feeling that it could take a turn into an area where I'm just like, I'm not into this. You know, it's fine. I'm not judging. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are into it. I don't want it to take that turn. From some of the reviews on Goodreads, I have a feeling it might take that turn.
Uh-oh. What do we get everyone into? What did we do? So Terp Kristen said, so somehow the Rule 34 meme actually passed me by. I even managed to miss the XKCD about it. I started reading this the other day. I'm finding the second person narrative a bit odd to get used to. I'm also sometimes thrown off by the dialogue. I have to read it out loud to get what Strauss is writing in the accent to fully ken what is being said. Anyone else reading it yet? I'm contemplating getting it on Audible to help me with the dialogue. The thing that's helping me actually is having read the Tiffany Aching series by Terry Pratchett, because I'm forgetting the name of the characters in that book, but the what are they called? Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. The characters in the book speak in a Scottish accent, and I listen to all the audiobooks, so I'm having not that hard of a time putting those words into my head, because there's very common phrases and very common words between these two books like common Scottish phrases. So that's not bugging me right now. The sexual content is definitely stronger than I imagined, though, like you, we probably should have seen this coming.
I mean, it's called Rule 34.
It's called Rule 34. So that's on us. The onus of that is on us. But so far, I'm enjoying the story. Like you, the second-person narrative is not bothering me right now. I find it interesting. I think it's kind of an innovative way to look at a book. You know, it's not something I've probably read, like I mentioned in earlier shows, since I did a choose-your-own-adventure story. And I totally get the like role-playing game feel that you're getting from it as well. What did throw me off a little bit was switching through the different narratives, going from the first female character to the first male character. I'm only at the second narrative right now, so I haven't progressed that far through the book.
What I would have liked is if they would have had two different narrators on the audiobook. And that's an audiobook-specific complaint, but if you have a male for the male and a female for the female, because you're right, when it goes to the male narrative, then the male reader doesn't stick out that much.
Right. So far, I'm definitely intrigued, and I like the bits of memeishness that are filtering through, and the techno jargon, and kind of the stuff that I enjoyed from reading Ready Player One and other books we've read. Oh, and also, of course, ReamD.
Yeah, it did put me in mind of those sort of not too distant future settings where they have carbon credits that they have to pay attention to. And so he takes, like somebody mentioned, they have to take the Segway to the crime scene. And
that cracked me up, actually. Yeah. The self-driving Segway.
a whole different media culture where everything they say is life-logged. And he doesn't talk about the press. He talks about the blogosphere as being, you know, what he has to worry about. So I like the sort of idea of a typical crime story set in this projected future. I'm digging that part of it.
I love this. Tassie Dave wrote, "You go and buy Rule 34, and you find the second-person narrative irritating. But you decide to slog on and hope they get used to this perspective. You are only 6% in. You are an optimist. You don't mind the accents, as they make sense when you imagine them spoken." Sure. That's enough from you. I love it.
I immediately, with the second person, did not bother me at all. And I felt like it was a text adventure. Mm-hmm. You know, you walk up to the house, you open the door, you see a key lying on the mat.
It's interesting because I feel like I'm imagining the scenes happening in a different way because of the second person narrative. I'm more putting myself in the mindset of the character, more like seeing from their eyes when I'm imagining what's happening.
Like a first person shooter.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's very new for me. So it's kind of cool that way. So I'm going to keep going with it. I'm going to see where it takes me. I'm going to finish it. And hopefully I'll finish it in time to read Empire State as well. Which, by the way, the author of Empire State got in touch with us over Goodreads. And is happy that we're checking it out. Hold on, let me pull up his name. His name is Adam. And he seemed excited that we were reading it. And he wanted to elaborate on the fact that it is not similar to The City and the City.
Good.
And I don't think he's just saying that. I think we just needed to kind of, you know, that was my first impression because I read The City and the City and I only read the description of the book. So I'm looking forward to reading it and checking it out.
Do we need to retire 1Q84 before we can make Empire State on Goodreads, one of our currently reading?
Oh, I don't know. I guess we should probably, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I'm done.
Shut up. His name is Adam Christopher. Sorry, Adam, I forgot your last name. So
how far are you from 1Q84? Because I finished up.
I'm not done yet. I'm on book 4 of the audiobooks. I'm halfway.
Okay, a little over halfway.
Yeah, because there's six parts in the audiobook.
Well, we could sort of like set it aside, and then when you're done, we could do a little conversation about it.
I haven't even tried to add 3. I don't even know if I can do that. I might be able to do that.
Well, if you can do it, then you should just keep it up there until you're done.
I'll try that.
But I'm ready to move on to Empire State, and I really enjoyed 1Q84. I understand why the people who didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't the kind of book that gives you a lovely adventure plot narrative and wraps everything up. This is the kind of book that you read because you enjoy hearing what the author is writing. And that's not typical for science fiction and fantasy. We read science fiction and fantasy, at least I do, because I want to experience a new world. I want to see what happens. I like story. I like environment. 1Q84 is almost entirely environment. Story is sort of a sideline in this book. Mm-hmm. It's all about immersing yourself in the aura of the writing. And that's a horrible thing to say. I take that back. But that's so pretentious. But it's about experiencing, you know, the writing, and it's almost like reading poetry in that way. It's you're just kind of soaking in it. And it's fun, and there is a good story, and I like the story, but it's not about the story. And so that's why when it wraps up, I think a lot of people were disappointed, because there are elements in there of a really amazing story that are a sideline to this novel. So I won't say more than that, because I don't want to be spoilery, but I loved the characters, and I loved the feeling that the book invoked.
Well, I was able to add Empire State as a book pick.
Okay.
For the homepage, so we've got that up there now as well.
Yay!
Learning new things about Goodreads every day. But yeah, just to finish up on 1Q84, I'm enjoying it. It's getting more interesting now. Things are happening, and that's what I'm excited about. So I'm looking forward to listening more and getting more into what's happening, and I'm looking forward to meeting that third narrative character as well.
Oh yeah, you haven't got to that yet.
What's their name again? You told me last time.
I know. I spoiled it for you, and now you
know. Now I care. Now I want to know, and you can't remember.
No,
okay.
I can't.
Well, we'll move on.
I won't tell you. I mean, I refuse to tell you. I refuse to spoil it.
Let's move on to the email. This one comes to us from Steven. He writes, I may be old-fashioned, but I have a pretty hard distinction between reading and listening. I have listened to quite a few books, but I always stumble over saying that I read the book. I always say I listened to. Yet, when I listen to Sword and Laser, it seems like you interchange these terms. Tom has mentioned that he is X hours into a book. Does that mean that he is not reading it, but listening to it? Is there / should there be a distinction between these two mediums? If I listen to a podcast, can I say I read it? What if I had a transcript, but I listened to the podcast? Would it count then?
I used to feel the exact same way as Steven, and it was Leo Laporte, who is my boss over at This Week in Tech. Right. Who convinced me otherwise. He said, look, it's a different experience, but it is still reading. It's not listening to a radio play. It's not listening to a podcast. It's listening to the words of the book. And yeah, there's a difference, and you acknowledge that difference when you hear it versus see it on the page and read it, but it's still reading. You still call it reading a book. You have read the book. If someone were to read the book to you, it would be having read the book.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. I'm convinced. I'm convinced by that argument of, you know what? I'm still experiencing this book. I'm still experiencing every word. Is it slightly different than if I read it, you know, with my eyes versus reading it with my ears? Yes. But I still call it reading.
I do too. And then it makes me wonder, okay, if there was a movie and you read the screenplay, you couldn't really, though, say that you watched the movie.
No, because you've missed an element.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't seen what was on the screen. Whereas with a book, what you're doing is having every word enter your brain. And whether you're hearing it or seeing it,
it's still exactly the same content.
Now, it's going through a different part of the brain
when
you read on a page versus read through your ear. So that's why, you know, I hesitate to say it's exactly the same thing, but it is still reading to me.
And there's also some potential differences between how the story is being, if someone's reading it, they may add a flavor or a certain
interpretation
of the text
that
may be different than if you just read the text. So there's that. But overall, I think it's a very, very similar kind of thing. And a lot of people disagree with us. I know that people out there disagree
with us.
But you know how we feel. So if we say we read it, we may have listened to it or we may have just read it. But we'll tell you either way. I mean, that's already come out when we talk about Rule 34, for example, because we're interpreting things a little bit differently because you're listening to it and I'm reading it.
Now, if I say I'm several hours through a book, that means I'm listening to it.
Right.
Yeah. MR writes in and says, "Hey guys, just started listening to you recently and I like what I hear. I'm impressed by how many books you guys can read so quickly."
No kidding.
I do have a question for you. Most of my reading is done through audible.com and just made a startling discovery. My Audible library is made up of all male authors. Hmm. Each one is great and I'm not lacking in genre diversity, only in gender diversity. Being female myself, it would be nice if my library would reflect that. So with the exception of Anne McCaffrey, I have plenty of her paperbacks. What female authors would you recommend? Spy thrillers is my favorite genre, but I will take anything in the science fiction or fantasy novels. Classics are welcome too. Please help before someone accuses me of being a sexist."
No, you're not a sexist, MR. So I would say if you love spy novels, check out Laurie R. King, because she is one of my favorite writers, and she takes on the Sherlock Holmes canon in a way that no one else has before. And they're done from a female perspective. So not only are you getting a female author, but you're getting a female perspective on a classic character. So there's three of your things mixed into one author right there. So that's pretty cool. I also like Gail Carriger a lot. She does kind of spy / mystery, steampunk, fantasy, preternatural kind of books, and I've read two of her books so far, and I really enjoy her. Fantasy wise, Robin Hobb is of course one of my favorites. Jacqueline Carey writes some really sexy, awesome fantasy. Octavia Butler, and of course one of the authors we've read on the book club, N.K. Jemisin.
I would add to that Andre Norton, whom a lot of people don't realize is a woman. And Ursula K. Le Guin.
Of course, another classic.
Those are two authors who have been named Grand Master of Science Fiction by the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America.
Fantastic. And then we have an email. Hi, Tom, Ronica, and Vera Tom. I just thought I'd ramble at you for a bit. I've been listening to your podcast for a few weeks now, and I love it. I remember someone making the comment about the magic systems of Brandon Sanderson being similar in his books. There's a good reason for it. All his books are in the same universe, and each is a shard, as he puts it. Yeah, I think we discussed that a little bit. I have a couple of book suggestions. On Basilisk Station by David Weber. It's the first book in the Honor Harrington series. Also, Live Free or Die by John Ringo. It's the first book in the Troy Rising trilogy, and they are all hilarious. You can get this book and all the others from the publisher Bayon for free. I have no idea how that is pronounced. I have a leftover gift membership to Audible, and I have no one to give it to. I thought you guys could use it for a contest. The offer expires on February 28th. All I need is the email address of the winner to prove I'm not a scammer. He puts his audio address there, his Audible member name, and have doing everything you are doing. I think he meant keep everything you are doing.
Yes, and we will. We will keep it.
We will keep and love doing it. Those things. So what should we do to give
I think
away?
We should just start a thread in Goodreads. And then who's
that's
this?
The thing I'm trying to find that I didn't copy the name into the email. Sorry.
Let him pick the winner.
But what is the contest going to be?
Yeah, impress him or her.
Hold on. I'm going to pull it up right now. I had to log into the email. One second. Sorry. All right, there we go. Okay, it's Mike.
Mike. If you can come up with a better book suggestion than Mike. Those are good books.
David Weber's
Honor Harrington is going to have a new one. Rising Thunder is coming out in March 6th.
I've heard of the Honor Harrington series, so maybe we'll check that out sometime. That sounds pretty cool. Now I don't know. I don't know what contest we should be. All right, I guess suggest a better book. Then Mike.
Or just suggest a really good book.
Suggest some, but we already kind of have that in the what are you reading threads.
Well, you don't have to have read these.
Okay. All right. Just suggest a book and we'll pick a winner. Or Mike will pick a winner.
We'll let Mike pick the winner.
And then he'll send you an Audible subscription.
Yeah.
All right. Let's spend some time saying hello to new members. We'll say hello to Joseph.
Andy.
Bob.
Shalene.
Adam.
Casey.
Bear.
Chris.
Alan.
Mark.
Craig.
Gregory.
Shalina.
Michael.
Marshall.
Bjorn.
Jordan.
Adam.
Kevin.
Soren.
John.
Brad.
Laura.
Mike.
Chris.
Jessica.
Napo.
Keith.
Mike.
James.
Elenara.
Orvelin.
Mark.
Mark with a C.
Mark with a K.
Joey.
Darren.
David.
Teody.
Alston.
Brain from Morris.
That's all he put. Lawrence.
Chris.
Greg.
Phil.
And Angus.
Yay.
Welcome to Sword and Laser.
Welcome to Sword and Laser. Welcome to Goodreads. We are happy to have you, and we hope that you are enjoying the threads over there. Anything else new you want to talk about? I think that's it for the show today. That covers it. Keep reading Rule 34, and if you're already done, pick up Empire State. We will talk about that on the show. I've got a lot of reading to do because I'm doing a super secret sexy project with a pretty well-known geekette that's going to happen on the 30th. I can't say much more than that.
Well, then why'd you say anything at all?
Because I wanted to titillate the listeners.
Well, I think you succeeded.
Titillate.
Yeah. Watch your language.
There's actually many, many well-known geekettes involved. So I'm excited that we will bring this to you. But I have some book homework to do. So it's going to be hard to fill in all the books that I have to read in the next couple of weeks. I'm glad I have the rest of the week off.
Humble brag.
I'm not even telling you because it's going to be so awesome. All right. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address is feedback@swordandlaser.com. The web address is swordandlaser.com. You can follow all of our discussions over on goodreads.com. And if you want to leave a voicemail, which I forgot to check today, the phone number is 415-779-6735. And we will see you guys next time.
Thanks, everybody.
Peace out.